on today's Run to the Top podcast.
The only one you can impress with your running is yourself. There's no one else to impress. No one else is impressed by your numbers, your times. If you're talking to a non-runner, they don't even understand what you're saying anyway. But, you know, I've always said, how far you run, how fast you run, it's all a matter of perspective. If it impresses you, then it's impressive.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. On today's episode, we interview Scott Ludwig, who has run every day since November of 1978. Some of you listeners were still gleams in your father's eyes. That's a lot of miles and a lot of years. Scott has stories about the big races like the Boston Marathon, the Western States 100, the Peachtree 5K, and the Badwater 135, and also the little hidden races around much of the country. Chances are, over the 40 years of pounding the pavement, he's run a bunch of them. He also lives in a town that is part of the filming of The Walking Dead and directs a race that has evolved from that connection. This man is definitely a runner with a personality and a commitment to running. His recent book, Running Out of Gas, is a fun collection of his experiences running around the country. Scott will entertain you and educate you on many of the races you may be considering in your running bucket list and, indeed, may never even have heard of. Stay tuned. We'll take a short break for a message from the Run to the Top sponsors before hearing more of Scott's story. Today's episode is brought to you by one of our favorite training apps, Strava. If you don't already know, Strava is the best route discovery and training log app. You can track all your workouts, runs, and other activities and use that data to find new places to run and train smarter. Now you also have the option of listening to Strava athletes on the new Strava podcast called Athletes Unfiltered. Every episode will feature amazing athletes, members of the Strava family, athletes like you and me with incredible stories to share. Later in today's episode, we'll share more about the stories and comebacks of three running heroes in the first episode. It's all there at runnersconnect.net/Strava. Today's show is brought to you by Fasciaware, a new sportswear innovation that helps you maintain good body posture and optimal alignment in your hips, knees, and ankles when running. I'll tell you more later in the episode, or you can head over to their website at fasciaware.com. Plus, if you enter RTTT in the promo box at checkout, you'll get 25% off your first order. That's fasciaware.com. Welcome back to Run to the Top podcast. I am Stephanie K. Atwood, your host, and we are interviewing Scott Ludwig, storyteller and master runner with more than 40 years of running every single day. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
The same. Thank you for asking.
Sure. We are recording this episode in early January 2019. How's the running going?
Well, I promised myself I was going to start slowing down this year, but 9 days into the year, I've been lying to myself, but I'm trying my best to cut back a little bit.
Exactly how many miles have you put in as of today?
As of today, 151,452. I knew you were going to ask.
Well, I kind of thought you would have that information, too. It seems like you keep track of that kind of stuff.
I do.
Okay, so let's start with the four basic questions. How old are you? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And what is your current favorite race distance?
I was born, that was the first question, right? Oh, I'm 64. I just turned 64 in December.
Okay.
I was born in Norfolk, Virginia. I was a Navy brat, so we moved every 3 years.
Wow.
I went to school at the University of Florida. I met my wife in high school. We went to Florida together, got married. We've been married for 41 plus years now. We currently live in Sonoy, Georgia. As you mentioned, it's the home of The Walking Dead. And my favorite race distance now, you know what? In my prime, my race distance of choice was really a time. It was 24 hours. So I could tell you it's a 10K now, which takes me almost 24 hours to run on some days. You know, I don't really think I have a favorite distance anymore. I just, because I don't run for time anymore. So
yeah, gotcha.
Any distance is fine.
Okay. And I, that actually was one of the questions I had for you as far as running every day. Is there like a guideline or a rule to make it called a run?
According to the Streak Society, you have to run one continuous mile per day under your own power.
Okay. And
tell, requirements.
Tell us about the society, because I read just briefly about that, but you're a member of a group of runners who run every day, right?
Yes. It's called the United States Running Streak Association, and they went international a couple of years ago. And the group started in 1994. A guy out of Pennsylvania started the club. And when he first started it back 24 years ago, I submitted my name and the fact that I started my streak in November of 78. And at that time, I was number 9 on the streak list. So over the last 24 years, I've worked my way up to actually down to number 21. There's been a lot of people, you know, joining the group from time to time. So
yeah, and they've been running longer than you have then. So obviously the club itself includes people who, as long as they've been keeping records, they've been running for longer than has existed. Okay. So another question related to this is, what does it take to get out to run every day for 40 plus years?
What does it take?
Yeah. What does it take?
Well, I retired last year, but prior to that, I'd been running ever since my first son was born in 1982. You know, I was kind of tied up with keeping my son after school. So I had to start running in the morning. So what does it take to run every day? I think the latest I slept for 38 years was 3:30 in the morning during the week.
Wow.
So it's, you just got to look at running for me as like brushing your teeth. Once it becomes a normal part of your routine.
Yeah.
And you just know that you're going to do it. And if you have an early meeting or something at work, you just back up your time clock accordingly to allow for that extra time. I always told myself that the hardest part of my day was over before I even got to work. and I truly believe that.
Well, I know you love your running, but also getting up at 3:30 in the morning does have to be a bit taxing once in a while.
Yeah, especially on the late nights or the nights that you never actually go to bed because you've been out all night for one reason or the other.
And you were talking about in your book, and we'll get a chance to talk about your book at several different times during this interview, but you talked about when you're directing a race, you'll get up at 1:30 in the morning so that you can go for a run before you get into the duties of directing the race.
I've been known to do that. And you know, a lot of the races I put on are timed races. So once I get the race going and I've got my lap counters in place, I'll go out and do more miles.
So you're talking about like a 24-hour run or...
We used to put on an 8-hour run. We put on 24-hour runs. We've put on 60-hour runs. So it runs a spectrum.
And so then you get in some extra miles during those 60
hours. I get a lot of extra miles.
Well, mm-hmm. Running seems to be a big part of pretty much everything that you do. There's a running component to it. Now, tell me about the Walking Dead connection. I have to be honest with you. I have heard of the Walking Dead, and I know some people are just total fans. And I think you said you hadn't actually watched it, or have you watched it?
I know every episode. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've watched it since the beginning.
So tell about the connection with the Walking Dead.
Tell about the connection. I lived about 10 miles from Sonoy, where the Walking Dead is filmed. For 24 years, I lived in Peachtree City, and one of my running buddies moved out to Sonoy right at the turn of the century, and she always invited me to come run. And finally, when The Walking Dead started getting popular, I started running with her on weekends because I was looking for different sites that were used for on location for the show. And I quickly fell in love with the country roads out in Sonoy. And before long, My friend Valerie, who was also a realtor, started showing me houses during our Sunday long runs. And 2 years after I started running with her, she found a home for my wife and I that we both hopefully will be our forever home. And we've been here now since summer of 2014.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. And so you also put together a race, and I don't know if you're directing it still or not, but tell us about that because it's connected to the Walking Dead theme.
Well, the first year we had it, it was called the Walking Dead. It was actually called the Running Dead, and it was 46.2 miles the first year. The second year, we upped it to a 50-mile or a 100-miler. And then the third year, we changed it to the Dark Side Distance Festival, the Dark Side being the name of the running club that Al Barker and I started in 2002. And we put on you had a choice of a 60-hour race, a 48-hour race, a 24-hour race, a 50-miler, or a 100-miler, or a marathon.
Now, did people have to come in costume?
They don't, but as an added bonus, we had they do tours in Sonoy. They do Walking Dead tours, and they have a lot of lookalike cast members doing the tours.
Uh-huh.
And the main character on the show was named Rick Grimes. He's a sheriff. And the lookalike tour guide looks exactly like Rick Grimes.
Yeah.
So for 2 years, he came out to host the race in a pavilion where the start finishes. And Rick Grimes, the lookalike, would come out. And everyone that was a fan of the show thought it was the real Rick Grimes. And I never told him any different.
Yeah, what fun. Mm-hmm. So, okay, different subject here. It's definitely still about running. How do you document your runs? You have a lot of detail to share. And in your book, Running Out of Gas, clearly you have information to refer back to. So how do you document your runs?
I do. And you might remember Jim Fix's Complete Book of Running.
Of course.
In the mid-70s.
Yeah.
In 1979, he started doing a running log, and mm-hmm. to this day, it is still made. It still has the same basic style, cover, et cetera. It's got different authors now because, you know, Jim Fix passed away, but I've got 40 of them completely filled, at least one entry every day for 40 years worth. So I've got every run I've ever made logged in those journals.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So that's a discipline too, that you've been really religious about following through with. Good for you.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Any New Year's resolutions about running?
I told you earlier, I was going to cut back this year. And I say that after I ran 3,800 miles last year, because I'm the type of person, if they get a number in their head, they stick to it until they get it. So some reason I told a guy one day, I said, you know, I have an outside shot at 3,800. And once I say it out loud, I'm going to get it. So this year I swore I was going to cut back and do maybe 60 miles a week. Week one, I did 77. So I already missed the boat on the first week.
Well, you said you were 64 years old, right?
I am. Yes.
Yeah, and I read in your book too that you were slowing down. That you kept promising yourself you would slow down.
If you've read any of my running books, you'll see that I make that promise to myself a lot.
Uh-huh. Well, then you must not take your promises very seriously.
That's the only one I can't keep.
I see. Okay. Uh-huh. Now, you are quite an avid runner. I don't think anyone would deny that. And some of the runs that you've done, or some of the races that you've done, are virtually unknown. And I'm imagining a lot of them are local races. And it's kind of fun reading about them in your book, because all of us have been involved in some of those small town local runs, and they're fun. You know, you know the people, and there's a good chance of placing, and the whole thing is just very community oriented. But I'm going to ask you now about some of the big races that you've run, and okay. The ones that you've run many, many times. Could you talk about some of those?
I've run the last 40 Peachtree Road races.
When did that start? When did that race start?
First year was 1970.
Oh, okay. So a little before you.
The first year I ran it was when we moved to Atlanta. So I ran it in 79, and last year was number 40.
Wow.
So that's another thing that I said, I'm not going to run Peachtree this year.
Uh-huh.
It's a hard thing to say because this year is the 50th anniversary.
Oh no! So you
and your buddies are saying, how can you skip the 50th anniversary?
Right.
But you know me, if I do 41, then I got to go to 50, right? So, I got a decision to make come July 4th.
Okay. Well, I'll be interested in finding out what transpires with that.
Yep.
So many other big races that you've run. And when we're talking big, I guess both talking big numbers of people and big distances.
Okay. I've run the Boston Marathon 12 times. At one point in time, it was my favorite race.
Mm-hmm.
I ran it for the first time in 1987. I PR'd that day. So I became completely enamored with the city. And I said, you know what? Why would I want to go back? Because I'll never top that PR probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm just going to sit on that. And then my friend Valerie, she had me help her get a qualifying time, which she did. Then she talked me into going in 94. Then we went in 95 and 96 and 98, 99 and 2000. We kept going back because, you know, it's every runner's dream. It was always my dream to run Boston. And back when I first became enamored with the race, the qualifying time was 2:50. And I didn't think I ever had a prayer doing it. And then I finally broke 3 hours because they changed qualifying time to 3 hours. And then I made it. Of course, now you know they do time graded based on gender. That it's not quite as difficult as it used to be, but it's still a challenge and an honor to run it.
Yeah. Are you going to be running it this year or are you finished with marathons?
Now you remember, you know the right questions to ask. Here's another one for you. I ran my last marathon in 2000 and was it 11? I think it was 11. I told my wife, I surprised her. We went to Honolulu for our anniversary,
mm-hmm.
For my birthday and for my 200th and final marathon in 2012. Two months ago, I ran number 208.
Uh-huh.
And I swore that was going to be my last one. One of my running buddies, he lives in Turkey now, him and his wife. And his dream was always for me to run the Istanbul Marathon with him.
Oh,
so Cindy and I spent, 10 days. Actually, it was 2 weeks. We spent 2 weeks in Athens, Greece. And then we went to Istanbul. Mm-hmm. And I ran Istanbul with him. And I'm going to go on the record now and say that's my final marathon.
Yeah, I think you might be better off not saying that, Scott.
If I said it on this, then everybody's heard. I told you if I say things out loud, I stick to it.
Okay.
So there you go.
There's a lot of people listening.
There you go.
All right. Now, were you at Boston in the year of the bombing?
I was not. I had a good buddy that went that year.
Uh-huh.
I was at work that day, and I saw it on the news in our break room. And I started texting my friend because he was running somewhere between 3:30 and 3:45, and he wouldn't answer. But then I found out later they had to turn their cell phones off and for fear of detonating bombs. And I finally got word that he was okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was quite tragic. The last year I was there was in 2010.
Okay. Now you did write about your Boston experience with the Boston Marathon in 2013. So I just couldn't remember if it was from a distance or if it was directly being there. But that's something that is just for any of us who are runners and the country, of course, in whole. It was just such a terrible, terrible thing. But you made a quote and now I can't remember it. It was something about if you're going to try to subdue a group of people, Don't pick runners.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was something along those lines. And that's really true. You know, the support for the marathon and for running in general right after that event was amazing. I know in our town and many other towns, they had lots of supportive runs the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They had some here and locally as well. That's the ones we were participating in.
Yeah. Now, you have recently finished writing a book called Running Out of Gas. What is the publishing date of that book?
Running Out of Gas, I think it came out it came out last year, but I can't remember the month. It came out in 2018.
Okay. And what compelled you to write that book? Because you've written how many? 13, 15, 18?
14 books, but 8 of them are about running. Uh-huh. I wanted to, this is my take on slowing down.
And, okay.
And it's just learning to accept as you get older, you're going to get slower.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds like a real depressing subject, but Stephanie, you've read a lot of it. And you know, I try to be upbeat about it. And I think I've done that. I talk a lot about my friend, Al Barker. He's been a running buddy of mine since 1993. And he's 10 years older than I am. And he's still running.
Yeah.
He did a good job of preparing me to accept the inevitable fate of slowing down and running less miles. Of course, that last part hasn't kicked in yet, but it's getting there.
I know.
The slowing down definitely is not here.
So if you're slowing down, then you have to budget a lot more time for these long runs. I mean, are you still doing 20-mile runs on Sundays?
You know what? That's what I hate. I'm running like... And I'll just tell you ballpark terms. I'm running like 35% slower than I did in my prime. And it's just kills me to be out that long to do, 35% less distance. So yeah. Am I still doing 20? Yeah. More than I'd like to say, but not like every Sunday, like it was for, a 20-year window there.
Now, what about the springiness? I was just reading in your book about a meeting you had with the neurosurgeons, and this was in maybe like 2014 or something. Uh-huh. It was a while back, where they said you had the spine of a 36-year-old, something along those lines.
And you know what? And I said, then why do I feel so bad? And he said, I'm just telling you what I see.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to a... another doctor friend of mine, and he told me the same thing.
Yeah.
Independent of the other guy. He never heard what the other guy said. He told me the same thing.
And right.
So I can't explain it, but the neurosurgeon, he told me, I remember he said, let me see you touch your toes.
Oh,
and
right.
That day in his office, I bent over and honest to God, my fingers barely went below my kneecap. And
yeah.
I said, oh my God.
Right.
So he said, you need to start doing yoga. So I've been doing it. I'm not an everyday streak yoga person, but mm-hmm. I do it, 5 or 6 days a week now.
Good for you.
And I can almost get my palms on the floor now.
Oh my gosh.
So that's pretty cool at 64. So
I think so too. And this whole nature of springiness, which is something that I've noticed in my running that, it just seems like it's so much harder to kind of push off, when you're trying to go fast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that is related to that flexibility. So how is your springiness?
Good days, bad days?
Uh-huh. Maybe. Yeah.
I should leave it at that. More bad days than good, but the good days are appreciated.
Yeah. Well, you have you're definitely the cup half full kind of guy. Now, talking about some things that you actually did complain about a little bit in your book, and then you always at the end say, oh my gosh, it was such a terrific experience, but you had some really tough ultras in your history, and there were 4 of them that you called your grand slam. Can you tell us something about each of them? And I'm going to just list them first so people can hear what they were, because first, you did the JFK 50-miler, then you did the Badwater 135-miler. Wow, 135 miles, and I know there's more to that story. The Western States 100 twice, and the Comrades Ultra Marathon. It's called Comrades Marathon, but it's definitely longer than that. So tell us about each of those in your Grand Slam.
Okay, the JFK 50, I did it. A buddy of mine was turning 50 and he wanted to do something special. And I said, why don't you do the JFK 50? And he said, why don't you do it with me? So we ended up in Boonesville, Maryland. I think that's where it starts. And if you know me, I can't run trails worth a darn. Me and trails just don't get along. If they made a running shoe for me, it would be made by non-trail, not Montrail. But we went up to JFK 50 and we ran, individually. But I actually, this was when I was in more or less my prime. So I ran well and I didn't fall down but once.
Mm-hmm.
I ran a little bit over 8 hours, came in 56. Someone told me during the race, if you finish in the top 50 and break 8 hours at the JFK, you're on a pedestal. And I missed both by a couple seconds in a couple places, but yeah. I didn't care. I just wanted to get off that trail.
Oh,
I got that one done.
Yep.
And then Badwater, there's a video called Running on the Sun, which is a compilation of some of the runners that ran Badwater, which is a race in Death Valley. It takes you across three mountain ranges and across Death Valley. It was the video was of the 1999 race, and I got it for, I think my wife bought it for me, if I think right. And I was watching it in the living room in 2002, and they showed all the runners in different types of distress. And I said, I've been there. I've had that. Oh, that's me. And at the end of the video, I said, I'm doing that. And my wife said, no, you're not. So 1 year later, I found myself in Death Valley with my support crew of five. And we made our way across in what we think and are pretty sure are the hottest temperatures ever in Death Valley.
Wow.
We had measurements of 133 degrees that first day out on the asphalt. Mm-hmm. And the hottest it's ever been on this planet is 134 degrees.
Jeez.
So we had a really good race. We were seated according to what place the race director thought we would finish. My race number was 20.
Yeah.
And to prove them wrong, I ran really well, I thought, and came in sixth.
Gee.
And
congratulations.
Not that race. But that was one of those races that I knew I was going to see that finish line.
Yeah.
I saw it in the video and I said, there's no way I'm not getting to that finish line.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that I didn't know is that it went over two mountain ranges and finished on a third. And the reason it didn't show up in the video is because all the runners were doing the mountains at night and you could not tell if they were going up these ginormous mountains. And if I had known that, I might have had a little different thought going in. But we had a good, successful trip. And
is any of it on trail or is it all on paved roads? Or
it's all on paved road,
which is
right up my alley. That's why I knew I could do it because I love asphalt.
Right. Wow. Well, you've got to be tough as far as the weather, and obviously 135 miles ain't nothing to laugh at.
Yeah, it was crazy hot. One of my running buddies, one of the guys on my crew, he paced me across the desert the first day, and he had a brand new pair of shoes, and the soles melted off the bottom.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
Did.
Okay. Now, move on to Western States 100, because you tried it once and didn't succeed, and then, of course, you had to go back.
I did. So 2004, my friend Al Barker, he wanted to run Western States because he wanted that to be his Badwater.
Yeah.
And he said, this enter on the buddy system. And I said, okay. And I saw there was like a 30% chance of getting picked. I said, I'm pretty safe. And darn if we didn't get picked.
Uh-huh.
So we went out to Western States. We did a lot of running on trails. And he's worse on trails than I am, truth be known. And he ended up dropping out. I can't remember where because they have time cutoffs at Western States. And now I think he got knocked off before the 40 mile mark. I can't remember where. I made it to the 62 mile checkpoint and I still had, if I remember right, I had like 12 or 14 hours left to finish, but my knees were beat to death. And I dropped out and I've never done that in a race before. And I felt horrible, but I was miserable. I didn't like trails. It was dark. I couldn't see. My flashlight wouldn't shine bright enough for me to see my footing. And I let my pacer down because he met me at mile 62. And I said, Gordo, I hope you don't mind, but I'm dropping out. And I did.
Yeah. That had to be hard for you.
It was really hard.
Yeah.
Because I could have done it, but my knees, they were really beat up really bad. And I was afraid.
Right.
Something crazy. Plus, it was more mind over matter. I just didn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
I knew Al was probably getting a bath and laying on the hotel bed and relaxing and drinking a beer. And here I was in hell. So 2 years later, Al says, we should try it again. And I said, okay, we'll do the buddy system. And this time I knew we weren't going to get in because there was like a 10 or 11% chance of getting picked. Well, guess what? We got picked again. So we went out there again. This time Al dropped out quicker than he did the two years earlier.
Huh.
And I was in misery and I kept saying, oh, please let me miss the cutoff. Please let me miss the cutoff. And I kept making them by 2-3 minutes. And then at mile 42, one of the volunteers poured ice water down my back and it like rejuvenated me for a long time, actually. And I got to the 62 mile mark and I met my pacer. And the only problem I had was my feet hurt because we were running through a lot of melting snow.
Yeah.
And he took off my shoes and he said I had gashes where my foot had split open that you could put a matchbox car in sideways and stick it inside my foot. And he said, if you don't drop out, I'm afraid you're going to risk infection and might get, to have a foot or two amputated.
Yeah.
And to show you what state of mind I was in, they said, do you have any duct tape? He said, this is against my medical advice and my better judgment, but if that's what you want, that's what I'll do. So he did. And, I hobbled for another 35 miles and I made that last cutoff at mile 97.
Yeah.
And once you hit that mile mark, the shot clock is off. You have, as long as you need to finish, that's fine.
Wow.
So I had a 15 minute cushion at that time, but I couldn't run anymore. So my pacer kept saying, come on, let's run. I said, I can't. All I can do is walk at this point. So I walked. I ended up finishing in last. you have to break 30 hours to get a medal. No, to get a buckle. So when I crossed the finish line, I got a medal, but not a buckle because I didn't break 30 hours. My official time was 30:16:58.
Wow.
But I got a plaque because I came in last.
Yeah, that's interesting. Kind of a mixed blessing, right? I mean,
I'll take that plaque. And I got interviewed on television. And they asked me if I'd be back. And of course, you know what I told them. So then I had three. And then the last one is, I've always heard about Comrades. All my running buddies that have done it said, you've got to go there. So Comrades is in the year we ran. It was from Durban to Peter Martzenberg, which is the uphill route. And it's a distance of 56 miles. And the night before the race, actually the afternoon before the race, I was about a block from our hotel and I got mugged. A guy pulled a knife on me, tried to get my backpack. The girl I was there to run the race with, she smacked the guy in the back. He dropped his knife. He grabbed my cell phone and he ran.
Jeez.
And I chased him in flip-flops. And I said, if I catch this guy, he's probably got a gun or a knife. He's got a buddy. Why am I chasing him?
Yeah.
I wanted my cell phone back, but I let him go.
Yeah.
The police came out that night. They took a police report, but they said there was nothing they could do about it because I didn't have the insurance policy for my cell phone. Oh. So they couldn't take my official report.
Oh, wow.
So that was at 5 p.m. Sunday afternoon. And the race started at 5 a.m. the next morning. So I had 12 hours and I think I slept for one of those hours because I was so upset about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And somehow we made it through the race. This is another time race. You have to break 12 hours where they have these big gates that swing shut. They won't let anyone finish after 12 hours. So I was on the clock, but the clock was never an issue. I made it by an hour and a half or so. But we hung around and drank a beer or two watching the gate close and seeing the runners that didn't make it. And that was very sad, especially if they were Americans like us and they flew 20 hours to get over there to do it.
But, yeah.
That was my big four.
That was your big four, your grand slam. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, you also ended up running a lot of races in the rain. And there was a chapter in your book, something like playing in the rain, or I don't know. I can't remember the name of that section. But talk about playing in the rain, because the chapter was like how miserable it is to run in the rain. And then you got to the end and you basically said that you'd never had that much fun in your whole life, or, something along those lines.
Oh, yeah. I think I might have written two stories about running in the rain. People always think, I called it one of the stories "Fool in the Rain," because I've been seen in the rain. I run rain or shine, so
right.
Been a lot of rain, and there's been a lot of other ugly stuff too. But I remember when my first son was born, I was out running in the rain and people making fun of me for that. But, you know, it was like a celebratory run and you don't really notice the rain when you have something like that to celebrate. I remember when my dad passed, I ran that morning and it rained and people probably thought I was foolish to be out in the rain. But, you know, that's how runners deal with grief. It's just, you know, what's that old saying? Don't shoo away the storm because you can't, then you can't dance in the rain.
I haven't heard that, but that I like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, the rain is just wonderful. The hard part is when you get out of in the morning and it's 38 degrees and it's pouring rain and you're not even wet yet. When you have to step out into it, it's a little different.
Right. But
still, once you're out in it, it's very exhilarating is the word I'm looking for.
And then as long as you can get to someplace warm after you finish, too.
Exactly. Hot shower.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I agree with you totally there. I love running in the rain, but I haven't done any, 100-hour or whatever 100-mile races that like you've done in the rain.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was another part of the book, and this was, I think, pretty recent in your history, and it was considering how you were going to be able to run again, especially thinking about maybe running another marathon, and this was a quote that you had seen at work. If it's to be, it's up to me.
Right. Well, you know, the only one you can impress with your running is yourself. There's no one else to impress. No one else is impressed by your numbers, your times. If you're talking to a non-runner, they don't even understand what you're saying anyway. But, you know, I've always said, how far you run, how fast you run, it's all a matter of perspective. If it impresses you, then it's impressive. So you can't impress anyone other than yourself. It's just a matter of self-discipline, what your goals are, what you're willing to do to reach those goals. And I guess that's why I keep a written record of everything I do in terms of running, so I can actually see, you know, what I've done.
Now, you also said something, and this was, I think, pretty close to the end of your book. My remaining statistical goals at this time are to extend my consecutive days running streak to 40 years. Oh, so it wasn't that recent. And to reach 150,000 lifetime miles by my 64th birthday. If I can reach both of those, anything else would be icing on the cake. So how much icing has there been? Because you reached both of those, right?
Yeah. And see, that's what I told you. My resolution, once again, is to slow down. And I, when I hit 150,000 miles, I think that was in August, I said, I'm going to slow down now. But then I told you I had that 3,800 in my head. So I kept it up throughout the rest of the year. And here's another thing. I write a weekly column for the local newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And in March, I retired in March. I think in April, I wrote a column saying out what I wanted to do in my retirement. And I said, I want to keep running. And one of the readers wrote me a letter, says, oh, yeah, I said that too when I retired, but it's not going to happen. And if for no other reason than to prove that guy wrong, I ended the year with that big number. And I, honest to God, I'm trying my best. I told my wife this morning, I felt bad this morning. I said, you know what? I think today is the day I'm going to do 3 miles. And I got out there and I said, you know, I really don't have anything to do today. A couple of chores around the house. I got to talk to Stephanie later tonight, but I've got all day. So I did 9 today. 3 became 9. And that's how it goes with me.
Uh-huh. And clearly running has made a huge impact on your life. What has it meant to you in broader terms? What has running meant to you in your life?
I was what you might call a fat guy before I started running. I weighed 195 right after I got married. And my wife looked at me one day and said, you're fat, go run. And I did. And obviously I didn't stop. So I'm about 45, 50 pounds lighter than I was when I was in my 20s. And I've maintained that weight for quite a while. On the other part is I do my best thinking in the morning when I'm running. When I used to work, whether it was planning my workday, figuring out what I want to say to my employees about something. And then it started evolving into what I'm going to write. And I do a lot of, in fact, the first book I ever wrote was called Running Through My Mind, because I do most of my writing while I'm running.
Gotcha.
I don't carry a recorder or a notepad, but many times I'll finish running, come in here, and I'll jot down a few notes.
Yeah.
The highlights of, you know, the thoughts, so I can put it together later. So I do a lot of that.
Isn't it great the way those thoughts go through your mind when you're running? It's just amazing.
And it really is. And what would be even more amazing if you could remember all of them when you were finished.
Oh, yeah. Got to go for another run. Try to get them back. Now, we are going to be moving into the final kick here. We're just about finished with this portion of the interview. But please, before we take off, is there anything else that you would like to share with our group?
Yeah, a couple of things. Thanks for the opportunity to do that. My books, most of them are self-published, but four of them are published by Meyer & Meyer, including the one Stephanie referenced earlier, Running Out of Gas. You can find them at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. Okay, that's my shameless plug for Meyer & Meyer. The Dark Side Running Club is a club that Al Barker and I started in 2002. We kind of started it more as a joke. We had six members. Before we knew it, we had 500 members. I turned the reins over to the club to a friend of mine named Joy McElroy a little over a year ago. So she's taken the reins of that club. But the thing that I liked about the club when I had it, was that it only took a $35 membership fee, which was good for a lifetime. It was also good for all your family members. So,
wow.
And we managed to stay afloat by the few races we put on. Mm-hmm. We tried to keep everything in a minimum. Mm-hmm. And the club survived for 16 and a half years with that lifetime membership.
Gee.
And that included annually putting $1,000 towards sponsorship of a race. For example, one year, I think we went to the race out in Michigan that's got the Woodstock theme to it. I can't remember the name of the marathon. But everybody that went that year, we divvied up that $1,000 and supported their entry fee.
Oh,
and
nice.
Transportation.
Yeah.
So it's the only club I know of ever that actually pays you to be a member.
So that's
something that Al Barker and I are really proud of.
Yeah. Oh, good for you.
And the first big race that the club put on was a 50-kilometer race in Peachtree City. Peachtree City 50K, obviously. And in its second year, it hosted the Georgia State Championship. And then in its third year, we held the national 50K championship. And that particular year, Ann Riddle, she's a pretty prominent ultra runner. She won the women's race with a 3:38. And the men's race was won by a gentleman by the name of Mike Dudley. He ran a 3:05, which happened to be the quickest time for a 50K in the country that year.
In addition to being one of the most fun and informative apps to track your runs, Strava is now adding a podcast to their support of runners. Strava is free to use whenever you go for a workout, and now, for those long workouts, they have added a podcast called Athletes Unfiltered. The podcast features stories of athletes around the world, just like you and me, and we're all part of the Strava family. I had a chance to listen to the first episode and loved it. My workout time flew by as I listened to the amazing stories each of the interviewees shared. The first episode is about three different runners who have overcome major obstacles to return to running after life-changing events took away their ability to run and, to a great extent, took away hope of living life the way they understood it pre-trauma. Their stories were incredible, to say the least, and inspired me to work a bit harder and be extremely grateful for the small problems, aches, and pains that I might whine about. Join Strava in their venture into podcasts with Athletes Unfiltered. I'm sure your workout will fly by as you listen and learn. Just go to the link at runnersconnect.net/Strava to listen today. Today's show is brought to you by FasciaWear, a new sportswear innovation that helps you maintain good body posture and optimal alignment in your hips, knees, and ankles when running. There are two reasons why I'm excited about FasciaWear. One, the fact that the idea is based on years of expertise and research working with athletes to overcome and avoid posture-related injuries. And two, the feeling I get when I'm wearing FasciaWear. It just makes you want to go for a run immediately. When you first wear FasciWear, you instantly notice how supportive it feels to your body, making you stand upright almost like you gain an extra inch in height. It is amazing how something so lightweight and elastic can give you that amount of support. FasciWear makes it easier to concentrate on and practice proper running technique even when you start to get tired because of the extra notch of support you get from it. What I also love is that they offer a 30-day, no questions asked, money-back guarantee. This way, you can take FasciWear for a test run and simply return it if not satisfied. If you want to give FasciWear a try, you can get 25% off when you use the code RTTT. Just visit the website at FasciWear.com and enter RTTT in the promo box at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your first order. That's FasciWear.com. Welcome back with Scott Ludwig. It's an American sounding, thanks. Author of Running Out of Gas and proud owner of more than 40 years of running every day. We are approaching the final kick, Scott, and are you ready to kick it in?
With what kick I've got left, yes.
Okay, so what is a favorite local training run there?
My favorite local training run is, you know, being the big Walking Dead freak, one of the country roads I run on is called Dead Oak. And they do a lot of the travel scenes on the Walking Dead filming on that road. Uh-huh. It's a rolling, shaded, blacktop asphalt road that stretches for about 8 miles. And we use that for part of our distance festival when we held it. And it's probably the favorite road for me to run on at this point.
Now, what is the town called again?
The town is called Senoia. S-E-N-O-I-A.
Okay.
A tourist will pronounce it Senoia. And uh-huh. That's how we know you're a tourist.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll try to remember that when I come to visit Senoia.
And
what about parking and bathrooms and that kind of stuff?
I think you know that when you're a runner, the world is your bathroom.
Okay. How about parking?
It's actually right outside of the city limits. It's okay. In a small town, population 187, called Harrelson, Georgia. If you're a Walking Dead fan, that's where Daryl Dixon killed his brother Merle once he turned into a zombie.
Ooh.
But there's a really nice pavilion there that you can park. And that's like I told you, that's where our distance festival was held, under that pavilion.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good run.
It is.
So how about a favorite or recommended running or running-related book?
Jim Fix's Complete Book of Running is still, to me, everything I ever wanted to read. I mean, that book turned the corner for me in terms of wanting to be a runner. Some of the more recent books, Rachel Tour wrote a really good book. Highly recommended that one. I think it was called Personal Best, maybe? Personal Record? I can't remember.
Okay.
But Rachel, T-O-O-R, her book is really a good one.
Great. And now you get to share a humorous story with us.
Okay, I'll keep it short. This is the story of my good buddy, Al Barker. And he would probably be upset if I didn't tell you at least one Al Barker story. So there's very many, and a lot of them are in my books. In fact, one of the book has a whole chapter about Al Barker. But Al... You know, I told you he falls on trails more than I do, which is hard to top, but he can do that. You know, Al shows up for cold weather running with a cat sweater on his head instead of a toboggan. I've seen Al Barker eat Starburst without taking the wrapper off because he didn't know they had wrappers. I've seen Al pour milk in his water instead of his coffee, and he drinks it to save face. I've seen Al drink... eat shrimp with a shell on. And then when you point it out, he says, I meant to do that. So he ate the rest of the shrimp with a shell. I've seen him eat potpourri out of a bowl at a party thinking it was.
Oh, no.
But that's not the story I had for Al. My favorite story is another buddy of mine named Dave Korfman. He used to direct, he might still do it, the Stone Steps 50K in Cincinnati. But he's been a friend of mine. We ran Strolling Gym together 1 year, and he came all the way from Ohio to run the Peachtree City 50K And I say he came all the way from Ohio to run the 50K. He really came to run the 50K to support my club and to meet Al Barker. So this particular year, Al Barker, the course consisted of six revolutions of a 5.18 mile loop. So Al, as he did the year before, was going to lead the group the first loop on his bicycle. So, you know, I counted down the race, got the race started, saw Al take off on his bike. 2 minutes later, Al came walking back down the hill with one shoe in his hand, his bike all beat up, and his face all bloody. And he told me his shoestring came untied. He got tangled in his pedal, and he flipped over the front of his handlebars. Oh. And Dave Corfin said, "You didn't disappoint." Oh. You're welcome, Al.
All right, Al. Well, we're going to have to read about you in Scott's book. What is the book that you have a whole chapter on Al?
You told me not to flip through my books while I'm talking. You know what? You're going to have to buy all eight. Yeah, all the books are on Amazon.
Okay, so that is actually where we are now. I want you to give me some information on who you might want to listen to in a future podcast at Run to the Top, and then it's time for contact information. And if you want to go through a list of all of your books, you're welcome to.
Okay. I have a topic, a subject for a future podcast. Bobby Gibb.
Bobby Gibb. Oh, yeah. Bobby Gibb. I'm definitely familiar with Bobby Gibb. Okay.
I profiled her in one of my books, Running to Extremes. So the name of the book is Running to Extremes, the Legendary Athletes of Ultra Running. Mm-hmm. And it profiles 15 prominent ultra runners. And one of the chapters is about Bobby Gibb.
Cool.
Bobby Gibb, she was a dark sider when I had the club. I came in touch with her through a mutual friend of ours in San Diego, because she used to live in San Diego, and mm-hmm. and Bobby Gibb, is just talking to her makes you want to go out and run. She loves it more than anyone I've ever met.
Wow.
And I remember that I told you the last, I swore 2004 was going to be my last Boston. And Bobby Gibb was autographing something with Bill Rogers at his running store. And I met Bobby in person for the first time, because we've been talking on the phone and emails. And she said, "So how did you enjoy the marathon?" And the way she said it made you want to go back. She just has that effect on you. And she's just a dynamic speaker. And like I said, she oozes running. So the subject, it would be Bobby Gibb.
All right. Well, then if you would afterward send me her email or other contact, I would really appreciate it.
I will.
Great. Thank you so much. And now we do want you to give us contact information and how our audience can actually buy your books and follow you on social media. So tell us all of the titles of your books, if you can remember all of them.
And I lined them up in front of me so I wouldn't forget them. Cool. I'm just going to tell you, I'll just tell you the running titles, not the other ones. I've written some other books. The first one was Running Through My Mind. And the first book I published was 2007. Then I did A Passion for Running, which is a profile of 18 ultra runners that I know personally that aren't really famous, like the Bobby Gibbs of the world. Then the third book was called A Few Degrees from Hell. And that was a synopsis of the 2003 Badwater Ultra Marathon. It was myself and 15 other participants in the race. 13 of us finished, and two of those that did not told their stories in the book. And one of the ones that didn't finish that year was Ben Jones, the mayor of Badwater is his title. And he's still very involved in hosting that race when it comes out every year in Death Valley. The fourth running book was called In It for the Long Run. It's a history of the first 10 years of the Dark Side Running Club. The next one was called Distance Memories, which was, I thought, going to be my looking back book, but there was others. I've got one called Running Ultras to the Edge of Exhaustion, which is kind of my life story, and it kind of chronicles those four Grand Slam races we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And then I did Running to Extremes, like I mentioned. It's got, you know, Tim Tweetmeyer, Ray Zahab, Dean Karnazes, Mark Covert, who at one time had the longest streak in the world, Bobby Gibb, Mike Morton, Marshall Ulrich, Pam Reed, who won Badwater 2 years in a row, Larry Macon, who has over 2,000 marathons to his credit, Tim Tweetmeyer, who had 25 sub 24 hour finishes at Western States. Helen Klein, and if you don't know Helen Klein, you're missing out. And Eric Clifton, Ed Ettinghausen, who I think he has over 150, 100 mile finishes now, and Ann Trason, who won Western States 14 times. Nice. So those are the runners that are profiled in that book. And then my latest, as Stephanie mentioned, was Running Out of Gas. And that's just a humorous take on what 40 years will do to you.
Now, how about social media? Are you on social media under your name or what?
Yeah, the only, I've got a Facebook account, just Scott Ludwig, simple as that. It's the one that it's a runner profile. There's a couple Scott Ludwigs. I'm the one that's got a running guy.
Yeah, totally.
And then, email's fine too. It's magicludwig1@gmail.com.
Well, Scott, it's been great interviewing you, and not surprisingly, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun for me as well. I appreciate the opportunity.
And for all of you listeners, be sure to follow us at the Runners Connect Winner's Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. Thank you once again, Scott. Wishing you much luck in your future running.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
And finally, thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great, great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.